Yes, first of all, thanks to DISNAP for making this platform available for us to really make it possible to educate people along the way here. I mean, in DISNAT, first of all, if you don't know DISNAT, it's Canada's leading online brokerage firm. It has been made that award several times by J.D. Power and Associates. Something very interesting, by the way, I just reading the Global Financial Magazine saying that DISNAT is now in the top five financial or corporations for safety in literally in North America. So it's been a tremendous accomplishment on their part, and I'm very pleased that they've made Steve Duchesne available to us today, who manages their GPS portfolios. And the thing I love about GPS is it allows you to personally follow what Steve's thinking is. They give an update every week to their subscribers, their clients, and then if he makes a buy or a sell, he always tells you why he's doing it at the time he's doing it. And that's what I'm going to get to today. I'm going to talk about specifics with Steve and really get to it, how he does it, how he's had a success record there. So, Steve, first of all, let me just say I appreciate very much you finding time for our audience here. And start with a broader question before I dig down to specifics, and that is, when you look at people managing their money over the last decade, 5 years, you talk to a ton of people, what concerns you about how they're approaching it?
Hi, Mike. Thanks for being with us also. I'm quite happy to be here today with you and with the people on that webinar. The big problem is that, in a weird way, the stock market is kind of always going up on the long term. Of course, there's a lot of volatility and movement. So people should normally be making money on the market. But what we discovered is that a lot of people don't do that well. Actually, some lose a lot of money. And it's kind of look weird to me. The market's going up and you lose money. There's some big problem there. I think there's some disconnect between what you should be doing and what you are doing. Warren Buffett used to say in Berkshire Hathaway annual report that all people had to do is to buy some good corporation, let them ride for a while, and they would have made money. Instead of that, they're losing.
Yeah, I mean, I guess within that context, there's a few things that maybe you could share with us today, Steve, about what they should do differently, what they can do better.
Well, there's a couple of points Mr. Buffett took, and we kind of tried to insert them with DISNAT GPS, actually. ICUS are people that trade too much. I'm not talking about trader here. Day trading is okay. It's a job if you know what you're doing. But for most people, they probably trade way too much and pay too high cost. DISNAT GPS is free. We don't make that many trades a year. It's around 10 trades a year. So at $10 a trade, it's $100. And you've got a managed portfolio for $100. Whatever your portfolio is, $100,000 or maybe $1 million, it's not important. So it's very low cost. Decision should be based on evaluation, and that's my job and the job of our team at DISNAT GPS. And also, people used to start and stop approach. What they're doing is that they try to time the market too much without the good tools sometimes. And the big problem with that is that they miss the good opportunity. As example, stock market over the past 5 years in Canada since we launched DISNAT GPS in April 2008 is practically flat. Our portfolio actually is up 25%. We're quite proud of that one. But most people, what they did is that they sold at the low in 2008 and waited till the bounce was very big before coming back. They lost the big part of their money in 2008 and they didn't make the comeback on the rebound. So we're trying to keep them calm. We're trying to tell them where we are going and what we're doing and what they, from our point of view, should be doing too.
Let's go to, when we look within all of this stuff, I mean, obviously people want to know what things you look at. And, for example, when you're looking at stocks, Steve, do you look at the overall picture or do you look at the industry or do you just get right down to the specific stocks? I mean, where do you start in analyzing what people should do in the market or what you do in the market?
Personally, what I do, first, my job makes it obvious. I'm managing Canadian portfolio, but also international portfolio and ETF portfolio. I'm one of the few in Canada who do all those kind of portfolios. So by definition, the first thing I will look at will always be the economy. We're using a top-down approach here. Because especially in Canada, we don't have any choice. Whatever we will be doing comes from outside. We have a lot of resources. Basically speaking, the important thing about resources comes from China. What's the situation over there? The United States is a big client of us. So we have to look at what the economy is giving us. If I'm looking at what we see now, it's kind of a weak economy we have. We have prediction of about maybe 1% GDP growth and 2% in the industrialized economies. We have some kind of 4 or 5% maybe in developing economy, which is quite low, relatively speaking. So we're always looking at the economy to start with, and at the current time, it doesn't look that good. It looks correct, it's going forward, but it's not that solid.
Well, then, you know, I mean, okay, but you start with looking at what the big economic view is, and as you say, your global view there is that, you know, I mean, you're not looking at really key growth there. Is there a variable, you know, maybe, you know, because we're not all doing this for a living, and of course that's the advantage of being able to see what you're doing, but is there a key variable that you look at or you're looking at right now these days?
Of course, that always changes, but currently, at the moment, the most important thing we're looking at and what everyone should look at is the monetary policy of the Federal Reserve in the United States. A couple of guests talked about it already on the radio show, Sooner On. You talked about it too. That's the big point. What they're doing traditionally is that Mr. Greenspan and Mr. Bernanke, who's been there, in the before, I could have put Mr. Volcker's name if I wanted to. Hereafter, it's probably going to be Mr. Summers or Mrs. Yellen. We don't know yet. The point is, it's not that important who's there. They've been using the same trick for the past 30 years. Since 1980, the whole trick is every time there's a problem, the crash in 87, a long-term capital problem in 98, 9/11, the credit crunch in 2008, they've been taking rates down. So that's the magic pill, I would say, for to cure the economy that Greenspan, Bernanke, the others before, and probably the next one will continue to use to take those interest rates down. And there's a big, big, big meeting next Wednesday. Everyone should mark their calendar. Everyone should listen carefully to what's going to happen there, because a lot of what's going to happen in the market for the foreseeable future will come from that decision.
And again, what do you think's going to happen this Wednesday? I think that's, by the way, let's hope everybody really did note what you just said, Steve. But what do you think's going to happen on Wednesday? I mean, what's the Federal Reserve going to do? What are interest rates going to do, obviously?
Okay. In terms of interest rates, we don't see any change in the key interest rates for any country or group over the next year and a half. If you look at the prediction from Desjardins Economic Studies, all are the same from now on till then, because Federal Reserve can decide the short-term rate, like the Bank of Canada is doing, like they can do in Eurozone, etc. The big problem lies more with the long-term, the 10 years. It used to be at around 1.5, 1.7. It's now heading back to around 2-3% currently in the United States. So it did go a little higher. We don't expect it to go that much higher. We don't think it's possible with a lot of debt that all those governments have currently. We don't think it's possible that it goes a lot higher. But as we can see from the numbers, it cannot go lower either, or not go lower a lot. If we look at Japan, especially here at 0.10, they can do a lot more on the interest rates front.
Okay, so you're not looking for some big jump here at this point. So, you know, the environment will not change that much. Let me just come to the one last big question here for you, and then I'll get to the stock market and specific stocks. But, you know, it's not that I mean, the big deal here is, what are the implications? I mean, you know, go back, not just this coming Wednesday, as you point out, Steve, but, I mean, in the last several years, what, you look at all the central banks, they've been producing trillions upon trillions of dollars. And, you know, which side are you on the impact? I mean, are you worried about inflation, worried about deflation? What's the deal?
Okay, well, with the quantitative easing program, and that's going to be the big thing on Wednesday. If I had to make a prediction for Wednesday, they won't touch the rate, of course, and they might take down quantitative easing a little bit. I don't expect them to take them down very solidly. I don't think the economy is strong enough for them to go that road. So maybe $75 billion is what now I think the average economist is expecting. It could go low as low as 65, but that would still be a surprise. That being said, whatever I say today, I might be wrong, and that's the beauty, I think, of this not GPS or a radio show like yours. People got some follow-up. So we don't know what's going to happen over the next Wednesday. We have our ideas. We prepare for that. But at any time, the game could change. As for quantitative easing, what it's been doing is printing a lot of money. And I'd like to bring quickly the example of Zimbabwe experiment about that. And don't get me wrong here. I don't want people to say that, hey, we're heading for those kind of numbers. But we're heading in the same direction, I would say. What Zimbabwe did is starting printing money in 96 when a dollar US was worth $10 of Zimbabwe. And we moved. Boom. 10 years later, only 10 years, instead of 1 to 10, we were at 1 to a million. Where are we standing now? In 2010, you could change a US dollar for 100 trillion Zimbabwe dollar. That's huge. So if we come back to the number, in 15 years, we went 1 to 10 to 1 to 100 trillion. That's 14 zero. So it's a situation that could happen, not with those kind of big numbers, but it's a situation that can happen sometimes when you print money. Other situation that arise is usually inflation. Inflation picked up in July 2008 there. It was at 231 million percent. It means price double every 1.3 days. When you want to buy something, do it now or you won't be able to do that next week. So that's the kind of thing we have. And like I said, I want to repeat, if they keep printing money the way they are doing, we don't have that much inflation yet because there's still some slack in the economy. But technically speaking, and it's the point of view of most monetarists, Milton Friedman, Nobel Prize, and some others, that down the road when you print money, there has to be some inflation, and I have to believe in that. And I think people should prepare for that because inflation, it takes your value out of yourself. If you have $100 and there's a lot of inflation, it's not worth $100 anymore. So pension could not be as big as we expected in real dollars. Investment could not look as good. If you have a 10-year bond that you bought when the government was offering you 1.78, if inflation was to go to 5 or 6%, you'll lose something like 2 or 3% every year for those 10 years where you're stuck in that bond. It's quite dangerous. So I think people should keep that in mind to make their investment decision. We could be heading for sudden inflation, maybe up to some numbers we saw in 79, 80, 81, where we were at around 13.5%. Nothing we're going there yet. Nothing we will reach that high. But it did happen, so nothing is impossible, especially with all the money they're printing now at the Federal Reserve.
And by the way, those Zimbabwe numbers are just astounding, doubling prices 1.3 every 1.3 days, for goodness sakes. Just very quickly, though, Steve, it's not just the Federal Reserve. Excuse me, we're focusing on that this week, but it's not just the Federal Reserve. We're also going to be looking at, Japan and Europe and that kind of stuff. Just a quick comment on that.
Yeah, well, it's all over the planet. If we look for Japan, they're talking about printing around $700 billion, U.S. dollars, this year. So technically speaking, it's even bigger than what the United States are printing in terms of the size of their economy. Same thing with Europe. So all over the place. So what I would say is that there probably won't be such big movement in one currency like we saw with the U.S. and Zimbabwe here. For one currency to go down, you need one to go up. Since they're all printing money, I don't see one of them going down that much and the other is going up that much because they're all playing the same game. But I expect inflation to pick up. Yeah, and it should pick up all over the place.
Yeah, and let's come to the market specifically then, Steve, with this. One of the things, as I said, I love about the GPS product is that I can follow what you are doing. Obviously you're taking inflation or that potential into account while you're still in an environment that we have today. I want you to get specific now and give me a couple of examples of what you've been doing in your portfolio.
Okay. What we're trying to do with the portfolio is that I call it the stock selection GPS way. We're looking for a good corporation, solid corporation. We're not doing quick trading per se. We are investing in corporations. So we're looking for growth. We're looking to see what they're doing with profit. And we're looking for some special situation. I'll go through those points with a couple of examples of stock we bought lately. We bought some potash on July 31st. Actually, I was quite happy to hear on the radio show, Sooner Han, that your technical analysis, Don Viello, said that there's accumulation from the big guys. He said he liked that stock. That was music to my ears. We bought that on July 31st. So I'm quite happy to see that the big guys are following us and the stock is something like 15% higher than what we bought at around $30. So if they can keep buying, I'll be a happy camper here. So what we're looking at is growth. It's a good example with potash. Over the past 10 years, revenue per year is up 15%. Earnings up 45% per year on average for the past 10 years. Of course, it's unsustainable. It won't stay that big. But it's huge and it's money in their pocket. So we're looking at that kind of growth. We want to see a corporation that's developing. We want to see what they do with profit. We're an investor. That's in part our corporation. So we want to receive some dividend. That's something I like a lot. When they pay me a dividend, not only it confirms to me that, hey, they're able to pay me a dividend, but it's money in my pocket. At least they won't decide to spend it unwisely. Buyback, when they buy back shares, same kind of thing. So for potash, dividend's been up on average for the past 10 years, 26% up a year. So it's a corporation that didn't give as much dividend before. They started to give a lot more in the past couple of years. They tripled it actually over the past 2 years. So it's the direction we kind of like. Other thing is the general situation of the corporation. We like to have good evaluation, so the stock that is not too expensive based on some ratio, price earning, price to book, and things like that. We like to make sure that we have some either diversification in product or some very good product. In case of potash, there's a lot of development in China, 1.3 billion people over there, 1.2 billion in India. Those people will want more and more food and maybe food that needs more calories per portion. That means they will have to continue to develop a lot. They will need a lot of those potash products. So those are emerging markets that are becoming stronger, that will be good client and will continue to be good client for potash. We have good evaluation, we have good growth and profit. And as we saw, potash was very, very strongly hit a couple of weeks ago. So we felt it was a great opportunity to buy that stock.
Let me just ask you about, you know, one of the things I hope people picked up on you were just talking about there, Steve, is you were saying that what you look for are quality situations that the market maybe is oversold. I mean, that's what creates the value proposition there. And give me an example of a company that you think the market's just done too much with and that, you know, is kind of interest to you now.
A company I'm interested in now? I would say there's a couple of good ones.
You may have just bought it, Steve. Yeah.
What?
You may have just bought it also. I'm just giving you, you know, because I've been watching your portfolio. I know you looked at a couple of miners.
Yeah. Well, in line with what we saw about the inflation, the whole resource sector is interesting. So potash, it was part of the logic, and the stock's been oversold on the news. Another one that did go down a lot and that we bought lately was tech resources. We bought some tech at around $24, actually $24.17, also on July 31st. And what I'm saying here, don't get me wrong, and I want people to understand. You have on the screen now exactly what you could see in a Disnet GPS account. I'm not inventing numbers here. I'm not playing with numbers. Contrary to what sometimes you see stock appear in portfolio. When we do a trade, you receive an alert that tells you exactly what we did. So July 31st, we bought potash. You see, that was a buy. We bought tech resources that day. So you can go see when you click on the detail here. Of course, it's just a print screen, so you won't have it. But you go on the detail and you'll see the main reason why we bought it. Most of the time, people already know we were interested in those names before because I talk about those in the weekly report. Maybe an interesting point you have to note here also is that, yes, we like tech resource a lot. Same kind of story as potash. Revenue up 17% over the past 10 years, earnings 34, they raised dividend 24%. It's a big leader, they're solid in a lot of sectors, and they will continue to do very well if the emerging market continues to develop, and we feel that even though they're in a slowdown now, they will continue to do well. So it's another good corporation that was beaten down a lot, and we use that opportunity. Actually, since we bought it, it's up about 15%, so we had a very, very good and lucky timing on that one. Maybe an interesting feature of the product that people need to understand is that it's easy to say buy a stock. A lot of people say that over every radio and TV show. The big problem is that at some point, you need to also sell them. You need to cash on that profit. And quite often the big problem is that the guy made a good recommendation to you, but forgot to tell you when it was time to sell because, as example, he wasn't invited back at the TV show at that point. Or if we're talking about some stock that sometimes we recommend when we go to an investment show, since the investment show is once a year, people see you only 1 year later. So the good thing with this NetGPS is we also tell you when we sell. And people can see, August 1st, we sold Staples at 17 and 14. That's a stock we bought 1 year before. For someone who's with Disnet GPS, you saw that exactly August 17, 2012 at $11.40. So we had about 40% ride with that stock over a year. So a year ago, it was very depressed. Everybody hated that. This year, it looks overexcited. On August 1st, we sold. People can do what they want with their portfolio. On that one, I hope they followed us because 2 weeks after that, they released their result. And we were right on that one too because results were not that good and the stock is now trending at something like 1450. So people would have been right to follow us on that one. We're not always right, of course. But what you can rest assured is that we always tell you what we do. So what you can see is as part of this not GPS. When we buy something, you know it. When we sell something, you know it. And you also receive quite often alerts that are just telling you where we are with different stock we're holding. So we have some example, Johnson & Johnson in our portfolio. Well, on August 13, we wanted to tell you what we thought of the latest earnings report and how we felt about that stock at that point.
Let me just ask, okay, so, I mean, those are great examples, and I want to just come back to that Fed, because you said it's the number one thing you're looking at right now, is what happens Wednesday. So, are you currently have a big chunk of cash in the sidelines, or that doesn't impact, you just think that's sort of background noise, and you're going ahead?
No, actually, we have some cash. We're at around 25 to 30% cash in our portfolios currently, which is a lot for a portfolio. The basis of our portfolio is that we want normally to be fully invested because the stock market on the long term is going up. So unless we have good reason to keep cash on the sideline, we want to be invested. That being said, I still make reference to Don Diallo Sunerhan said, from May to October, you quite often want to hold cash. It's something we quite often do. Even though we're more on the fundamental side, we also look at some technical analysis and some seasonality. Especially now, we felt like there will be a shock at some point maybe, and we want to have some firepower. So we have some cash. We're waiting to see what's going to happen on Wednesday. But we'll probably want to be invested for the remaining of the year because technically speaking, fourth quarter is usually a good quarter. So will we do that right now after the Fed meeting? Will we wait a couple of weeks because September and October could continue to be weak? It depends, of course, on what they will be saying. But yes, we have some cash, we have some stock and some situation we're looking at, and we're getting prepared for that. If people want to know what we do, of course, the thing is with this Net GPS. It's easy to transfer an account to us, and as soon as you sign on, you have access to everything we do. So the minute we do a trade, we will do an X-trade, our clients will know exactly what we did. So yes, for now, some cash, because we want to be able to profit if the market was to go down and offer some good bargain.
Steve, I've got a couple of questions here, and I'll get to them. And let me just review them here, as our time is short, of course, and I hope we get to do this again, by the way. But what are you looking at specifically today? You just gave us a hint there that, you know, maybe you raised a little cash as we come into October and stuff. But are there any groups or maybe a couple of stocks that you're kind of really on your radar screen right now?
Okay, one of the big stories I'm looking at currently is either for ETF portfolio, but also in terms of stock. I'm looking at the situation of Brazil, actually, a lot. The stock market over there is down solidly since the beginning of 2013. The currency has been hit, too. And I think it's maybe overshoot at some point. They will have the football, soccer, Mundial next year. They will have the Olympics a couple of years down the road. So I think there's a lot of good money coming from outside going there. They have a lot of resources that will be back at some point also. So I'm looking at Brazil a lot. I think there's something interesting there. I didn't pull the trigger yet. I don't know how we'll do that either. I could buy some ETF or some stock in Brazil. I could buy a BRIC ETF because India and the rupee are also down a lot since the beginning of 2013. China wasn't that strong and neither is Russia, so the BRIC could be good. We might be looking at an ETF for Latin America. So those are all ways we could use to play Brazil. But I feel like Brazil could offer some good opportunity and been probably it a lot too much. Last quarter still had GDP growth of 6%. It's nothing to be shy of.
Yeah. Now, any other groups? I got a couple more questions here, just very quickly. Within that, coming to North America, any stocks that you like there that, again, I'm just saying they're on your radar, as you said, you're not committing the money at this point.
Yeah, well, there's some stock I have in portfolio, and I think people should take a longer look at those. In Canada, we have a good stock market, but we have some problems. Some sectors are not very strong. Healthcare is government here, so we cannot invest in that in Canada, almost not. So I think people should look outside for that. If we look in the United States, there's a Johnson & Johnson we have in portfolio, a Novartis, which is a Switzerland corporation. We have a Sanofi, which is a French corporation, in the healthcare sector. We also have on the U.S. market a stock that I like a lot, and it's nothing new, of course, Microsoft. There's a great situation there. Of course, there are problems. Like Apple is strong, and there's not as many computers. People go with intelligent phone and with tablet and everything. I get that. But we're talking here about a corporation who's got a AAA rating, who's got practically no debt, a lot of money, still some very, very solid product, some monopolistic product in some business, and the stock currently trade at around 12 times next year earnings. We have a market trading now at around 16, and the Dow Jones might even reach 17 when they rearrange on September 80 with September 20 with the new stock that will come in because they're more expensive than those going out. So Microsoft is technically speaking trading at around 12 times earning while the market is somewhere at 16 or 18. So the market is now 25 to 50% more expensive on price earning ratio than Microsoft. It means that investors think that Microsoft is not even as good as the average S&P 500 corporation. I don't buy that. I buy Microsoft, but I don't buy that explanation. To me, it makes no sense. I think we have a corporation that is at least as good as the market, and it trades now at a very, very deep discount. So that's the kind of stock I like currently. Of course, I like it better when we bought it at 21 about a year and a half ago. It's up 50% since that point, but it's still cheap by any measure. It's out of the radar of most people. They don't get interested because we're talking more about Facebook and Apple and things like that, but Microsoft is still a solid corporation, good money, good dividend that they raise every year. They buy back stock. The whole story is very, very good. Of course, they have their problem. That's why the stock is still cheap and we can still buy it at a bargain price.
That's a great, great story there. Great explanation, Steve. Let me just say a quick question, quick answer, I'm sure, on this from a guy named John. How long do you usually plan to hold your positions when you purchase them?
Okay, we try to buy stock that are undervalued. So we will hold them as long as the market does not recognize that. So I would say I usually look for 3 to 5 years down the road, but I'll give you an example of something that could go different. About 5 months ago, we bought some Walgreens in the United States at 32. I thought the stock could go to 48 over a three-year span, so it's 13, 14% compound annual performance. I would be quite happy with that. The stock did go to 48 in 3 months. Well, I sold that. That wasn't my plan. My plan was to hold it for longer. But it did give us what it was supposed to give us. The market recognized the real value and put it at a fair price. We thought it was best to sell it. But technically speaking, we're looking maybe for 3 to 5 years normally.
Yeah, I think that's, again, a great explanation, Steve, that you're prepared to hold it for that time period, but obviously the market then dictates the, you know, actions that you took. So that's a wonderful example. Again, just two more questions here, then we're all done. But very quickly, Steve, do you worry about currencies? You know, we're Canadians, we're investing. So let's say I go into the yen and the yen falls, or the euro, I buy a stock in Europe and euro falls. Do you worry about that?
Not that much. I would say it's kind of complicated, and if I want to go the short road, I won't go into much explanation. Let's just say that the important thing is that we have a global portfolio, and it's not a U.S. portfolio. It's a global portfolio. I think the whole thing is there. If you have some stock in the United States, so the currency is the U.S. dollar, some in Japan, some in Switzerland, some in Europe, when one of those currencies go down, the other goes up and vice versa. So you're kind of protected by having that diversification. The big problem is with people who are only acting with U.S. stocks. There you might have a problem as Canadian. But if you go really global and diversify in different currencies, one has to go up when the others go down. So one into the other, I don't have a big problem with currencies as long as I diversify like that.
Let me finish with this question, Steve, and because you were talking about, you look through the market for quality situations that maybe the market's overdone on the downside. And that, you know, one of the groups that comes to mind at that point are gold stocks. Do you have an opinion on gold stocks in general? Let's say quality gold stocks.
I don't trade that much in gold. The big problem I have with gold is that I have some in the ETF portfolio currently. I use that, I would say, more as an insurance. If matter things turn for the worse, it might be the only sector that will do well. So I like that in that term. The problem I have with gold and gold stock in general is that I think they're very good trading instruments. I heard a couple of your of people on the radio show, Sooner Han, and most of the people who trade in gold trade very quickly, like maybe for a matter of month or two. Since this not GPS, we don't go that fast. We're more kind of buy and hold. I'm always reluctant to commit to a gold situation for the long term, but I do that usually as an insurance. When I feel insecure, depending, as example, what we will learn on Wednesday, I might decide to take a position, but I wouldn't take it, I would say, as much to make big money with it as to protect part of the portfolio in case everything else turned for the bad.
Well, Steve, let me just say you've done a fabulous job here, and I want to thank the people at DISNAT for making the technical platform available. My apologies to people for keeping you waiting a few extra minutes as I figured it out, but great to have them with us. And my appreciation for DISNAT for making the platform available, but especially to you, Steve. It's a Saturday mid-afternoon for you. Really appreciate great advice. Nice to have you.
Thank you very much, and thank you for being with us, Michael, also. It's always a pleasure to talk with you, and it always makes things a lot more interesting.
Well, I thank everyone for being with us on our first webinar, and you can just go, again, just a reminder that GPS is this product that you can actually follow what Steve's doing the whole time, and with GPS, you can just go to DISNAT, and again, any client of DISNAT who's online trading can have access to GPS, but my thanks. So I'll say so long for now. Thanks for being with us.